The Kickoff on Radio City Talk. Your one stop for Merseyside sport.
This is Radio City Talk.
Morning to you, Neil.
Poor form. Sorry I'm late, everybody, and what's especially that? Steve.
Is there such a thing as starting a young lad too early?
Yeah, could well be because what
at
you don't...
a certain age?
Yeah, because I think firstly it's setting expectations for the player. I mean, you know, there's every chance that if you start Woodburn tonight and next season we add another couple and we look in great shape, it might be that he ends up having more starts this season than next season. Then he might be wondering, what has my development stalled? There's that. There's also just sort of overburdening them with pressure and all that sort of stuff. And I think wanting to keep their own aspirations and ambitions slightly in check, you know, for Woodburn to become the talent he could become, there's a long, long way to go. But that said, you know, you start Raheem Sterling at around the same age and you go from there, and I think Sterling's a phenomenal talent.
But then you've got like a Jerome Sinclair, haven't you? I mean, they're different cases.
They're all different players. But tonight I would start, and I don't think it's not necessarily, it's not even about Ben Woodburn tonight why you'd start Ben Woodburn. If the manager feels as though he's close to ready, he should start him. And the reason why is because we're chasing the league title here. Firmino's 50-50. Sturridge still hasn't put his training sessions together. The optimism is that he does so by the end of the week. And then I would not personally be risking Mane off the basis of those previous bits of information. And I would start Origi, but I'd be looking to get him off on 65. And then you go from there.
So maybe wrap them all up in
Cotton Wool. Yeah, get them all wrapped up in Cotton Wool, because we go to Bournemouth at the weekend. We need to win. You know, Man City are against Chelsea. Someone's going to drop points and we've got to take advantage. We've been saying for ages that the league's a bit of a false position because we've played everybody apart from Man City and everyone else isn't in that boat. And that's definitely the case. But the only way in which you demonstrate that that's the case is by winning the other games. Now, the 0-0 at Southampton's fine. A friend of mine's got a great metaphor. He says it's like getting a spare when you're bowling. In that sort of draw against Southampton, it's like getting a spare, he said, because what that means is it's what you do with your next ball. And if on your next ball you bowl a strike, then that spare looks great. And that's what's happened when Liverpool have beaten Sunderland. But then you've got to back it up again with another strike. Liverpool have got to go and get another strike. And that's what they've got to do against Bournemouth. And then you're able to go, great, that's 7 points from three. We all know where we stand. Yes, we dropped points against Southampton, but we played well, we looked good, and we go from there.
And it looks comfortable. Peter, on the Woodburn thing, let's face it, if he starts tonight, everyone's glued to him, aren't they, for the game?
Yeah.
Even though there might be undue pressure on the lad, I think a club like Liverpool, you can't help but sort of hark back to, say, look, thinking about a young Robbie or something like that, can you, Peter? You want to watch this lad and believe that he's the best.
Yeah, I think after his pre-season, he was superb, wasn't he? He was one of our standout players early pre-season. And I think tonight, if he plays, he will be. He'll be a player that everyone's watching, everyone wants to do well. But I just hope there isn't too much pressure on him tonight with people saying he's the next Robbie Fowler, Michael Owen, even people saying like Raheem Sterling coming into the side, because he's a completely different player for that, I think. And you just don't want to put too much pressure on the lad where they can hamper him. And it could be, with too much pressure on tonight, he could perform badly and then people will get on his back and say he shouldn't have started. And
do you know what you said though? Too much pressure? You put him out there in front of 40,000 people. That's
50,000 these days.
Oh yeah, I keep thinking it's 42. Yeah, 41. You know, 50,000. That's as much pressure as you'll ever get, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think that,
to be honest, there's a quarter final as well, isn't it? So it's quarter game as well tonight, I think.
Radio City Talk. Match of my life.
The pressure in the opening 7 minutes of this second half has been quite intense. Sammy Lee with the first corner from the right hand side. Lawrenson arriving far post. Yes. Rush jumping with Miller. Here's Dalglish with a great chance of two. Now, can he beat Clement? Yes! Dalglish, that will win it. Kenny Dalglish, 2-1. Ronnie Whelan, edge of the box, chance for three here. Yes, that'll do it. Ronnie Whelan, the man who scored twice at Wembley against Tottenham Hotspur, wraps it up at Anfield. And the league championship, without question, is on the way back to Liverpool.
How were the rest of your teammates reacting to what you'd just done there?
Nonplussed. Most of them.
Because that was the character that Liverpool Football Club installed in them, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It was winning is a tradition. Yeah. It's not something special.
No.
It's get on with looking at doing it the next year.
Yeah, absolutely. So nonplussed. But, you know, and even I wouldn't say I was excited. I was chuffed because, obviously, my mum was there, my stepfather was there, and my two sisters, of which one has passed away. She only passed, she was 32, but she was there, which I always think was great. And my Uncle Joe and Auntie Alice were there as well. I don't know how I got so many tickets. And my Auntie Alice had never, ever seen me play, and she thought, how good is this? Only game she'd been to. you know, you're winning the league, beating Tottenham, and all this 50-odd thousand people screaming. She thought, whoa, I'm having some of this.
You'd obviously made the right move within your career from Brighton to Liverpool.
I knew straight away.
Yeah?
Yeah. I knew straight away that... And it was just... Ron Atkinson had just got the job at United, and, you know, he made me a really attractive offer, but I just they were rebuilding and stuff, and I just thought, no. And honestly, that night when I had my medical, well, so-called medal, I knew straight away that it was right. Just something inside me thought, this is right, Fitz.
You mentioned earlier the game against Manchester City on Boxing Day.
Mm. And we got booed off, I think.
I think it's Phil Neal who tells a story about how Joe maybe shouted at a few.
Maybe.
Yeah, no, Joe really laid into most of the squad. Was that a definitive moment in that season?
Yeah. Joe peeled the paint in the dressing room wall that day, and Joe was really clever. He never named names. So he came out with this absolute diatribe and said, I am absolutely sick of this, all that kind of stuff. Very clever. And I think we were all ready for it. It was a little bit preordained, I would have thought. But he blasted the room. So, of course, what happens is, you're then thinking, does he mean me? So he's got 11, 12 players thinking, does he mean me or not? So which is clever in itself.
Oh, incredible.
Very, very clever. But yeah, and that I didn't hear, I think I only heard two in all my time when Joe was there, God love him. But that was, because I just remember like looking, because you put your head down, don't you? Don't let him catch my eye or something. He might be looking at me and he's sort of staring at your boots, and I just kind of have a little sideways glance. And even Suey, Charlie and Kenny, like they were like, whoa. Tomo would have been there as well. They were like, whoa. Because they obviously hadn't had too much of that.
And it was very different style from Bob, really, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, they were clever. They worked. They were miles ahead of the time. That the whole boot room thing. They were everything. They were just, psychologically, they were miles ahead of everyone. And you know the other thing about the boot room, after the game, and they used to get everybody in, they'd try and get the opposition a little bit drunk, like the manager and the coaching staff. And you know, they'd come in, even if we'd won 5 or 6-0, and they'd go, hey lads, really, really unlucky today, you've had a fantastic season. And then they'd start asking them questions about the way they train and what they do. They just, I think, A, for the fact, if they thought that we were doing it right, or they were just trying to learn stuff all the time. But by the same token, it was almost like giving a little pat on the shoulder and going, yeah, I get lost, we just stuffed you 6-0. But they were clever.
Radio City Talk Breakfast. The kickoff with Steve Hothersall.
Radio City Talk.
Everton, the official complete record. It's out now, 1878 to 2016, and I don't think there's much that's missing. In fact, is there anything missing in terms of Everton's history? Let's find out from Steve Johnson, who a work of love, a passion of life for him. Morning to you, Steve.
Good morning, how are you?
Right, well, that first question. Has anyone highlighted anything that's missing out of this book? Because it has stats on appearances, goals, games, everything from when the club started to right now. Has anyone highlighted anything that's missing, or is it the complete record?
Well, that's a difficult one to answer. It's the official complete record. Yeah, it's got everything in there that you'd ever want to know about stats from an Everton point of view. Not just the stats, but the story of the club over the period from its formation in 1878. But the nature of statistics, there's always something new around the corner. This is the second edition of the book, so it's built upon what existed in the first edition as well.
Well, the nature of statistics is they're there to be debated. Now, I don't know whether you'd seen the giant picture of Graham Sharp outside Goodison Park, and he came into the building last week and had a little bit of a face on, and he said, they've got my goals tally wrong. So straight away, I opened up your book, and he was heartened to find that you had his goals tally right within your book. But how hard is it, and how much work goes into it by yourself in sort of putting a stat down and then double-checking it and making sure it's 150% accurate?
Oh, it's something that never ends. You're always conscious of the fact that you're dealing with stats from a long time ago when you're dealing with a football club like Everton. So in the early years, of course, there was lots of scope for error with newspapers reporting on matches, not really knowing who some of the players were, not having the means to debate what went on in a game. And goal scoring is obviously a key thing in a football match, and you would think that as the years progress, that would become easier, but Graham Sharp example that you gave there to show that it's not quite the case. He scored a goal away at Luton, it is the point in case here, in 1986, I think it was, which was quite clearly a Graham Sharp goal. It was recorded by everybody as a Luton defender's own goal, and no one quite knows why that would be the case, but hopefully I've put that right now and Graham can be a bit happier about that.
I think you have put it right. He was far more comforted. There's a great forward by Bob Latchford in here. Talks about when he first signed for Everton in 1974 and the tradition of number nines. When you're talking to Bob about the work you've done, the research you've done, what was it that really struck him?
Well, Bob, who people would be glad to hear, is one of the nicest men you could ever meet, as well as being an Everton legend, of course, was at the time that he joined the club, the latest in the long line of famous number nines. Everyone can remember names like Dixie Dean and Tommy Lawson, but lots of others as well. And in fact, there's a whole new section in the book about number nines that lists all of the players who either worn that number for Everton in the days that numbers were worn, or have had the squad number in the more recent Premier League era. So yeah, there's a lot of information about lots of things, including number nines at Everton.
And there's that great quote as well. He said, "I met Dixie Dean in April 1978 when I'd scored my famous 30 league goals, and Dixie said, 'Just remember, you're only half as good as me.'" What a great comment.
Great comment, isn't it? Absolutely brilliant.
You know, obviously things have changed in the past 10 years and changed in journalism and everything we do in life, even, say, people who are researching at university. It used to be libraries, didn't it? And much tougher to access sort of statistics. You've got this whole sort of internet environment, this world at your fingertips now to sort of chase everything up. Has it made writing this book easier?
Yeah, of course, it makes it a lot easier with the rise of the internet, but you do have to have one eye on the truthfulness or the correctness of what you're reading. You can't just take things at face value. You do have to check and double-check and triple-check everything. But, yes, certainly, it's much easier now to access newspaper archives, for instance, online, rather than having to traipse around libraries as people would have done in the past. Mm. So yeah, we are in an age that gives more information, but that's a double-edged sword because there's a lot of incorrect information out there on the internet.
Steve Hothersall's Kickoff. This is Radio City Talk.